My name is Dale Ching. I'm a former detainee of Angel Island Immigration Station. And now I'm a docent for Angel Island Immigration Station as a docent. And so.
Okay, that's good. Dale, do you have a Chinese name, Dale?
What's that?
Do you have a Chinese name?
Yes.
Can you tell me your Chinese name?
Oh, yeah, sure. Qing Dai Chong.
And maybe you can say, you know, my Chinese name is Qing Dai Chong.
Yeah, oh, okay. All right. Well, my name is, okay, my Chinese name is Qing Dai Chong. Is that talking to?
That's perfect. So you were a detainee at the station. Do you remember when you first came over, what your impressions or thoughts were as you sailed into the bay?
Yes. Well.
And maybe you can tell me how you came to come on a ship.
That's right. Well, my name is, you want to start all over?
Yeah, you can start from the beginning if you like. You can start from the beginning if you like.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My name is Dale Ching, and the Chinese name is Qing Dai Chong. When I left the village back in 1937, and I landed in San Francisco, at that time I was 16 years old, and, well, my immigrant over here came back to this country. My father and my brothers all here. And when I was 16 years old, my dad would say, hey, it's time for you to go to the United States. No. So they get all the applications and everything, the papers ready, and send it back to me back in China. And I got the paper, and then I the other end, then I would start working, processing, trying to come over here. And I have to went to the counselor over there. And then they okayed it. And then I went down to Hong Kong to get the ticket to come over here. Well, that time you have to went through everything. What I mean by that, you have to go see the doctor and get everything's okay, check out, get all the shots necessary to before you can apply for the ticket, to buy your ticket on the boat to come over here. And that was back in 1937. I was 16 years old.
How long did the trip take?
Oh, from Hong Kong, we're boarding it in Hong Kong, and then to San Francisco, it took approximately about 22 to 24 days. But we 22 days bonding right in the Pacific come across.
Can you describe the conditions on the ship?
Well, when I left China, left my village, I left behind my mother and my younger brother back there. Now, I travel along, and that's the first time I have a long journey. What I mean by that, we left the home, and then it took that many days to come across. And all strangers, it's a couple hundred or so people on the boat. I don't know them. They don't know me. And we just travel along. And day in, day out, we look at the sky, look at that water. And I was lucky. I didn't get sick. So most of them, youngsters, they might get sick, and also they were all lonesome. They left home so lonely. So, and then again, a lot of them, they don't talk to you. We don't talk to them because we don't want to get them going. They probably study something or whatever. But I found out what it does. A lot of those people coming over, why they have to study something. What I mean by that, now I know what they're doing all by themselves. But they really have to memorize all those questions preparing for the interrogation. At that time, I don't know why they kept so quiet coming over. So now we know they are studying and try to memorize all those question answer. And so that's the thing. I was lucky I didn't have to do that. But nevertheless, I still have to went through the interrogation.
Was it all men on the ship?
Oh, the majority is men and boys, most of the boys. What I mean by boys is, they're around, let's say, anywhere from 10 to about 18 years old, mostly. But, of course, a lot of elders, old men, people's coming out. Very few women, very few, not too many. Of course, we don't talk to each other, it's all strangers. But we do met a few. And then when I got into San Francisco, I was expected to see my father right there, and I'd be in Golden Mountain, or let's say San Francisco. But I was wrong. I didn't even see my father when I got in there.
Were you worried?
Huh? Oh, yes, I was worried. I was worried. And when are we going to see each other? And then when we got into San Francisco, I didn't see him. Of course, you see a lot of people on the other side of the dock. You on board ship, you couldn't tell which is which. Besides that, I haven't seen my father for over 7 years.
Well, he had been there that long, huh?
He was over here a long time. He'd been here for, I would say, maybe about 40, 50 years, I don't know.
Did he have to go through Angel Island, too?
Oh, no, he didn't. He was, well, way back.
Before they started doing it. Mm-hmm. 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 Mm-hmm.
He might have the different port, but I don't know.
So you arrive on the island. Tell me what you saw, what you saw around you. A lot of people, were they still not talking? Were they still a little bit nervous about talking to other people?
Okay. When we dock in San Francisco, then we know they always say that all the passengers were aborting, you know, getting off the ship. Now, all what they talking about, all, I assuming was including me, but I found out I was wrong. They say all passengers, that means all the people returning to this country. Then they can get off. And then when it's my turn to try to get off, well, what happened? They say, no, you're not. You have to go to Angel Island immigration station to prove it. Well, what they mean by that is, I assuming my paper, my application, everything, it was a citizen, so I assuming I would get off, but I was wrong. And then when I show him that, he said, no, you got to go to Angel Island immigration station to prove it. You are a citizen. Then you can get. So, okay, all the passengers off the ship. Then we are the one left behind. And then boarding a ferry from San Francisco, they took us direct to Angel Island.
Now, you know, you're pretty scared. You had your expectations kind of changed. What are you feeling like right now with all the people? So there was absolutely nobody that you knew on the island.
Well, everybody keep it for themselves. Number one, now I know what would they, why are they keeping it? Well, I guess I've been in there for that many years as a docent and learning from experience and all that. Why? Because they are worried about talking about things themselves. Oh, that's why they don't want to talk to you, even though they would like to talk to you to get away from the moon, you know. So, but they don't. The reason they don't want to, they might say something wrong, and I might spill the bean, I can say. Something like that, see. So that's why they don't want to talk about.
So were there spies there?
Huh?
Were there spies, like people that were kind of telling on other people?
No.
But people worried about
They
that, though.
worry about it. They worry about it because you, when you're talking to a stranger, you don't know who is that stranger. The stranger could be a spy, like you say. Yes, it could. But none of the Chinese do. Chinese, they don't. We don't talk to them. We talk about friendly, daily use things, and but nothing personal at all.
So tell me about the place that you stayed. Do you remember which barracks you were in?
What's that?
Do you remember which building that you stayed in, and what your day?
In the island.
Yep.
Okay. When the ferry docked at the station, well, at that time I don't even know what station it is. But when we got to the island immigration section, the station there, that dock, when we get off the ferry, just a small ferry from San Francisco to there, is a government outbreak. Then when you get off, they have people waiting for you. What I mean by that is the guard is waiting for you at the dock. So myself, or let's put it this way, mostly the Chinese immigrant cannot speak English. And even then, it's kind of hard, very hard. So when we get off the ferry, and again, you have all your suitcase and everything, and you line up on the dock. And the guard will say, all right, put all your belonging in the warehouse. Only thing they allowed you to, from the dock, only thing allowed you to do is what you've got on, the clothes, that is. Then you'll put everything in, take what you need. It's a couple set of underwear, your daily use, such as your towel and toothbrush and that. The rest of them will be in the warehouse. You will get them back since you leave. If you leave today, next week, you will get them all back and take it with you. Otherwise, it will be in the warehouse.
Now, how long did you stay?
The way it works seems like it is very different from people to people. What I mean by that is some of them might be lucky leaving it within 4 days. Some of them might stay in there for about 3 or 4 years. So what's the difference between a 4 day and a couple of years? The 4 day, well, before that, I don't know nothing about that. Now I do. Because 4 days is some of those people are merchant or a citizen was born here. They went back with the parent to China, and then when they were young, baby or so, when they come back, then they have the papers to prove that they are born here, but still not classify you be able to leave. But still want to check, how do they know you're a baby? You have no picture then. See? So you still have to have somebody to reference to bring you back, see? And this way, it could be a 4 days for the merchants, easy. They get everything cleared up, and the boss go down there and recognize them. No. The people stay longer than that. Usually, after the interrogation, then if they say, well, you didn't tell the truth, you got to deport you, go back to where you come from. Okay, so whoever sponsors to bring you here, they're not going to let you go back. They spend so much time, money to bring you here. So they have to go to court and to fight to get that okay for you, to clear your truth, everything. Then that's the people that have been there for so long. And again, there is a lot of mistake. Not exactly mistake, is the paper son, paper daughter. Now, those people are not real. As far as they know, themselves, yes, I'm real, but you try to prove that I'm not.
So it's proving their identity was not
That's
real.
That's right. Mm-hmm. They're proving it. Because the paper son is, now everybody knows that it's a paper son. It's wrong. It's not a real thing. It's, I don't know, majority, a lot of people, they never heard of a paper son. What is a paper son? Paper daughter and all that. Well, the, like, excuse me, maybe you can cut it out. You want me to talk about that too?
Yeah. You can talk about that too. That's fine, yeah.
I mean, that's going to be a...
I mean, we know the definition.
You got the time?
Yeah, we got... No, I mean, we do have the definition of what it is. Did you know people that you... So you knew people or met people that... Did you figure out that they were paper sons and daughters, or did you not know because you were young and didn't know about those things?
That's not my business, right? But that the idea is, yes, we know it. Why? How do we know it? You want me to continue on now?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. We're talking about paper son. Well, at the time when I was there, back in 1937, I don't know nothing about paper son or paper daughter or whatever. Never heard of a thing. When you in there for a while, and you notice that people kind of quiet and mumbling, jumble, and talking to themselves, and they talking about it, and those are the people you kind of wonder why they do that. And later on, you find out they are not the real. What I mean by real, like myself, my father is my father. And if I buy the paper from somebody else, or my father make the arrangement buying a paper, that means it's not the real. You are different family, related to different family. So that's what they call them, paper son and paper daughter. So when the longer you're in there, the more those things you notice it. The newcomer come in, they kind of stranger, and they wonder, and they, you know, they are mumble jumble and talking to themselves. And again, you got the hunch you don't want to interrupt them because they are trying to be there. And everybody wants to help each other more or less, even though we don't know each other, but you get there and you find out and try to.
So there wasn't a real heavy competition. I mean, everybody knew what they were there for. So they were really willing to support the other people, even though it may have been in a very quiet way?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They do. Because this way, we don't want to jeopardize the other guy's freedom. We are coming over here as a, you know, try to establish a new life, more or less, over a different country. Back home, mostly are poor, cannot support the family. So if you have a chance to go out, different places to start a new life, you go. And some of the people over there, I'm talking about the immigrants, either new or old, or new people or young people, they started out kind of, I wouldn't say it's very poor, right, in the in-between class. And they can't afford to buy a paper to come to a new country. They won't do it. If you can't, yeah, so poor, you cannot afford to buy paper, then sorry about that, you can't do it. So that's just a lot of them. For doing that, to coming over here. And the reason for that, now I know, the history of the United States is compared to when the time when I came over, I don't know nothing about this country. The only thing I know, I'm going to see my father and my brothers. You see.
Now, what else do you remember about some of the other detainees? Were they from I imagine that they were from all over China, many people.
Oh,
But do you have any memories of some of the other detainees that stands out to you? Like maybe someone who left an impression with you that maybe you met later too?
yes, we met a lot of people, like you say, you know. When I left, I was 16 years old. Of course, I'm on my own business and just like anybody else when you're a stranger. But the more time you have in there, you're doing nothing anyway. So you're talking to a stranger, you're getting acquainted, no longer a stranger. And then we do talk very freely about it. Then we know where they come from, like myself, I know where they come from. I mean, different district. See, I'm from one district, he's my different district. As a matter of fact, they're like most of the Chinese at that time from southern part of China, near Hong Kong, around there. And again, I recorded that I cannot speak their language, their dialect, entirely different from mine. So we kind of later on we learned each other talk about our own dialect and they talk about this way, break the monotony. You know, so you if you keep thinking about that, geez, I'm going to be here forever. That you might go and doing something. So you're not, then that this way then we can talk each other pretty freely afterward. But what I mean by afterward is, like myself, well, I was there for that many months and I was waiting for the interrogation. When after interrogation, then we can more or less freely talk about things. Because I can talk to the paper son or paper, that he can tell me his own story. Because after interrogation, yet we still worry about it because some stranger might say, be a spy to talking about to the official. But you have to know who's who to talk to.
Was there anyone that you can remember that stood out? Like someone that you have a particular memory of, or are they just all
Oh,
a big crowd of people?
so forget about now, so many years. But like, let's say today, I cannot remember way back 50 years. You know, back then, when I left, there was in the summer, there was no school. After, when the school's open, we see some of the people there in the classroom.
Now, any of the, and you said that the people told some of the stories. Do you remember any stories from what people told you, some of the other people, after you got a chance to talk a little bit?
We did. We talked a lot. Matter of fact,
Anything you remember in particular? Or?
we always talk about what you do in China and what you go to school and what kind of school and what kind of grade and you know, no general, no particular about your name and that at all. No.
So people kept the conversations pretty general, yeah?
General, yes. Mostly like that. And, you know, when you're 16 years old, 18, 17, you do go outside and play ball and then forget about whatever.
You don't have that much to talk about. So there were, you know, the station has pretty much been saved by the writing that was found on the wall, because it seems as if the writing was
That. Now, when you were talking about, well, I wouldn't say everybody, but even 16 years old, some of them pretty educated people. But myself never did write anything on the wall or anything like that. And even you see people writing on the wall in general, they are express themselves, sorrow, one way or the other, why I'm here, why, you know, all those things got their own feeling, they just write it on. And those are pretty educated people, too.
So you saw people writing?
They do have writing, but we don't pay much attention to it. We know what they're doing, we know what they're carving and all that, but we don't do nothing, just let them do.
Do you think they had a sense that that would last so long, or that they were just trying to express themselves?
That's right. They're getting tired of waiting. And some of them, pretty hard to say everybody will have the same idea. No. But they express themselves, why I'm here, what I'm doing in here. I'm in the future. Do I have any future at all in this country? Or am I going back then? What happened? What kind of future I have back there? I know what kind of future I'm going to have. If I'm a farmer, if I have to go back, deport back, I'd probably be a farmer again. Now, if I have the privilege to enter this country, then I will start a new life, and I'll probably be much, much better off to stay home. No good, see? No future back home. This way, I hope I get a better future. And that's the majority of the people. The same thing when they write it on the wall. They expect themselves. Like some of the poems you read on the wall, they might be married. They miss their wife and then all those things and going on. Yes, there's a lot of them like that, but it's pretty hard to read right now.
Mm-hmm. So when you saw these people, you didn't really think much of it when you saw them doing this?
Even I see them doing that, it's not my business, and I agree with them, what they're doing, more or less, because I cannot do it myself. If you know how to do it, you can better that way.
Would you consider yourself educated when you came at 16?
I wouldn't say I'm an educator, but I know something. I have a few years in school. Mm-hmm. Well, equipment to the American style. Well, I did have 8 years of school in Chinese school. So I know how to read and write, not as well as somebody else, but I can do it that way.
So you never wrote on the wall?
Nah, I never put anything on. And went to school, but that's it.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's been a few years since then, and you have a whole, you know, new world, a new life. You got, I imagine you got reunited with your father and brothers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I left the island back in the same year, 37.
And how long was your stay there?
I was there in the island. I was there in 3.5 months in the station and stayed there. Now, when I was in the station, let's talk about it in general. At first, when I got off the ferry and got in, and they, well, of course, I don't know anybody there. They don't know me, so everybody's a stranger. So that, when you put everything in, the guard will march you off the dock and take you to the hospital. There's a hospital there. And the doctor will look you over, give you a physical checkup, which is we already had back in Hong Kong. But again, when we got there, they are looking. As long you are healthy, there'd be no problem. If you, let's say you get a seasick on the way coming over, you might be contained inside the hospital, keep you there for a couple of days for observation, make sure you have no disease and so on like that. After that, the guard will march you off the hospital to your quarter, and that the barrack is only one way you can get into that barrack. There's a gate right there at the porch, and the stairway going in. The building, they have separate. Men going to one room, women go to the other, of course. Then if you're a married couple, the guard will separate you. It will, just the way, well, the man go this way, woman go that way, and that's it. Now, you go in there. After you in your quarter, the door will be locked from the outside. Then you have no chance to come back out again until the next time the door is open. So the barrack itself is pretty good size barrack. And the women's quarter is about a regular school classroom. Maybe they holding about what? Oh, maybe about 25 by 25 or so, 30. And the women's quarter is maximum they can hold. People's in there, there's 100 women and children. And the men, it's twice as big. It holding about maximum about 300. So it's pretty crowded in there. The facility, as far as that go, when I was there, it was it's much improved compared to the old timer told me. There was very little thing you can do about it. Nothing was such like the women's quarter. They had 100 people in there, and the going into the bathroom. The original bathroom, the way I understood it, they talked about, they two ditch on the floor. In other words, on the floor, they cut a hole on it and they use it for your toilet. And two tubs, the no laundry tub, no shower, no bathtub. The washroom, there's only two. So you got 100 people, you want to wash up before you go to eat your breakfast or something, it's going to be overcrowded.
Was it clean or dirty?
Well, you do the best you can. You do it yourself, and clean it. But they do have people come by and do it, cleaning it for you. But even then, you can imagine water is kind of scary. So everybody make it do the best you can on your own. Like your own area, we have in the barrack, the bedroom, we have three tier of the bed. So in other words, they got a pole, two poles to mounting your bed on it. Three poles, you will have 12 people in it. Three on one side and so on. And that's the way it is. And when the time I was there, it's much improved compared to the original. Now, we have a lot of toilet then. But it's still one thing, no privacy whatsoever. You're going in to take a shower, no curtain. You're going into the toilet, you sit there and you come out and like that, no partition in between. So the man, it wouldn't be so bad. But just think of the woman. They have nothing on that. You're going to take a shower, no curtain, what's up? But the sleeping quarter, 10 o'clock, the light will go out every day. The light go out. And no matter what you do, stop, you gotta go to bed. So, but the bathroom, yes, the light is on all the time. But it's kind of scary to go. Especially in, like myself, I never left home by myself. You might say my mother's always provide for everything, I take care. So that's a lot of difference between the youngster and stranger place.
Mm-hmm. So it's been, a lot of years since then, and you live, in a whole different world from what you grew up in. And now you have a chance to, you tell the story. You've told it many times. I don't think you can tell it enough, because it's an important story, and I think it's why we insisted on talking to you. That question is on there. What does it kind of mean to you, or how has it changed you? And what does it mean to have had this experience and to have the chance now to tell the story again?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's put it this way. When I left the immigration station back in 1937 when I joined my father and everything. I went to school. Matter of fact, I went to school in San Francisco for 1 year. And then, and more or less a graduate, you're in the school and you're learning a different way. That's what you want. That's what I want, to learn it the American way. And more little bit by little by little, and more or less I forgot what had happened back then. But you still, it's there, but I don't want to think about it. I want to think my future. My future is, first of all, I don't know how to speak English when I got here. So my, right now is not the time to think about the bank. I want to get my future to set up. So I want to know more about this American style, you might say, the way to doing things. So I have to learn, main thing, learn my English, try to get it so I can speak to the next guy. And this way, then I'm in school now, controlling more or less in my future. Well, after that, a couple years later, and you graduate, you've put everything behind me now. So, well, the World War II start. 41. So, well, then at that time, then they say, well, you got to be drafted, go into the service, fine. And now I'm more or less like the American way now in doing it. So I was enlisted in the service. And before they called me in, and then at the time it's tried more or less. I went forward, somebody keep pulling me back from behind. My history, bring me back.
Was this something in you or the people that were around you? Was this something in you that was kind of
That's
calling you
me,
back?
Myself, was thinking, I want to get ahead, my memory back behind me, hold me back. See, what I mean by that is, my memory is, I always think about, geez, now I got the chance to go forward, and why is those things, my memory back in the Angel Island, hold me back like? Don't want me to go forward because put all those things, bad memory, try to get in front of me. What I mean by that is, when I was in the service, I was trying to do the American way to try to get ahead and helping us in the war and all that. Well, I can't get anywhere, seems like. The way I want to do to help to win the war, and yet, thing is memory, I have that memory behind me and say, gee, why should I help? Why should I help? Because I'm so desperate wanting to get ahead, and yet those things that I have no reason, when I first got here, they put me in that, locked me up in that, and I didn't have any criminal record or anything behind me when I come here. I was to begin, you know, start and get a new life and do my own thing. And that's the reason put me back. And then I kept thinking about when I first got here in the place, they treat me all that bad. Why do I have to go forward to help, but fighting more or less. But okay, fine. Now then, I settle down, try to win the war and forget about the back. When the war is over, when I got out, try to look for a job. I can't find a job. There's job here and there, but you know, I cannot get the job. Even I have the qualification to prove it, they won't give me the job. That really hurt. It does hurt. But, and then why I come back? Why? Well, okay, when everything's war's over and everything's gone fine and I'm getting ahead, I'm happy. I have the opportunity to do things I want. It's more free. And compared to all the things. And, well, okay, so much for that. When I'm retired and I'm all right. I'm not poor. I wouldn't say I'm rich. But at least I can get by with what I want and the things that are treating me all right. And so Angel Island is another story. Forget it. Now my future is here. I'm bearing up my own future and I'm okay.
So it's almost like that was kind of another person, yeah?
That's right. So, well, when the thing is this, Angel Island is always as a military space. When immigration is gone, that is from 1910 to 1940 closed, and that's a barrier and everything is gone. Okay. So, well, the government, or let's say the State Recreation Department, California, want to take the buildings off because it's too old. They want to demolish it or either burn it one way or the other. So that ranger walked through the building, tried to see if anything could be salvaged, and he found nothing except that poem on the wall. With the flashlight, he can see it. And he knows something important, but he can't read it in Chinese. So he was smart enough to went up to San Francisco University. There, got a professor down there and read that. And was saying, yeah, it's very important. It should be preserving. Ah, now, that is the time. So the Chinatown in San Francisco, we got involved. They wanted preserving it. But we had no money, no power to do things. So now somebody's backing you to go. So we did, went up to Sacramento and get that permit. And preserving the place and make that a museum. Even then, that's a hardship yet. So that's a gentleman, and keep calling me. He know I was there. He found out, I don't know how he did. He know I was there as a detainee. And he keep asking me questions and all the, and want me to go back to the island to show him where and so on, what is it. I didn't want to go for many years. Many, many years. I didn't want to go back.
Was it just a bad memory?
A bad memory to go back. But I know what it was they want to know. I told them what I remember. But myself, I don't want to go back.
So what made the difference to make you finally go back?
Well, again, now from 72 on, 73, then 90, they still get more information to forming a good foundation to be able to put it on a museum or, you know, the history of it. So 91, that's a funny thing. During all that time, of course, I've been married and I have children. My children went to school. Nobody talked about Angel Island. So when he later on found out it's a museum, he wanted me to take him back to the island immigration to see what's what. I didn't want to go.
Now, who is this? The professor?
My children.
Oh, the children. Okay.
My children.
They wanted you to go back.
My son, my daughter, and all that. They want me to take them back to the immigration station to tell them what's what. I didn't want to go. And, of course, years go by, and my grandchildren were smarter. They went to school. They went to school, and they know I was there, but they don't know the history of it. And their father know about it. They don't know the history of what all that. So they've been after me to take them back. I didn't want to. Now the grandchildren grow up. They were in school. They heard about it, Angel Island immigration, but they don't know the history. So they are smart. They keep asking me for to take them back. I say no. Okay, that one day they went to the ferry down in San Francisco, bought the ticket, and handed to me, Grandpa, let's go. That's how it started. Then when I got there that day, it happened to have children on a field trip to school. They were just like any children on a field trip, they go out for have fun. So they was in, and then they have the docent take them around to show them what so we tag along with the docent. Went through the whole barrack, listened to it. I'm in the back, I listen to it. I don't say nothing because I have no business to tell them what to do. They're the docent. So the children went through. After we went outside the barrack, I got the school children, a couple of them, on one side, and I asked the children, today you're over here on a field trip. Now, you went through the barrack, you listened to the docent. What did you learn today? That's very important. Well, the children tell me, I don't care. I'm here. Well, I don't learn anything. I don't want to know anything. Only thing, we don't have no school today. I'm enjoying my picnic. Now, that really hurt me because that's a history. A history, you should not forget it, especially on that group, children.
Well, it's kind of like that person that you were trying to leave behind was suddenly about to be just completely wiped out in a way.
That's right. So it hurt. It hurt me more than it hurt, you know. So, okay, I said, fine, you enjoy your picnic. And that's about all I can say. I cannot say, hey, you. So then after that, I say, well, I'm at the age now. I'm not going to be here forever. The history got to be here forever for the next generation after now, to learn about it. And that's how it did. And it brought me back. And that is back in 1991, and I've been back there as a docent for that many years.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I think it, in some ways, it kind of completes the circle in a way, and it kind of completes you too.
Yeah.
Because here was that part of you that you had worked very hard to leave behind, and suddenly when it seemed like
somebody tricked me.
Somebody tricked you, but it also seemed like when the next generation was about to just not even have knowledge of it, that would have meant that part would have been completely
lost.
But then it sounded like it finally was speaking, maybe again, you know, to you strong, to that it needed to be alive.
Well, that was since from 91 up to now, I've been putting in more than over 5,000 hours doing that. So even like a couple of days ago, I was in one of the school classrooms in San Francisco talking to the children. Now, I've been doing it in the island. I enjoy it, to tell you the truth. I'm enjoying it now. Before 91, I hate that the people would mention it. And want me to go back then, I don't want to go back then.
So what changed?
Huh?
What's the difference?
Well, you have the memory. You don't want to repeat it all the times. You don't want to. I want to get ahead. I want to put everything behind me. But after that 1991, and more or less like I'm waking up. If I'm not going to tell the history, it will be gone forever. I'm not that good, but at least I do part of it.
Well, I mean, you were there, and uh-huh. I think that
that's
you know
right.
What's that saying that you know, Gandhi mm-hmm. says, you know, it's you know what you have to do may not be very important, but it's important that you do it.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you're doing that. Has that, and it's made your, I mean, would you say that it's made your life more complete?
Right now I'm enjoying and doing that, because the people more or less get educated from somebody else. Just like you going to school, what for? School is a school, but somebody's up there, the teacher's up there, the knowledge pass on to you. And you respect that teacher to tell you that. And that's what the student today respect me to tell them. And I will say majority of them respect. See? So, I mean, at least I know I'm doing something, try to help the people to understand. And I don't expect everybody will do the same, what would like. But history is history. Without the history, I don't know what will happen. You know, I mean, all those things got to have something. Mm-hmm.